On today's podcast, tape 18, Piper at the Gates of Dawn and A Saucerful of Secrets by Pink Floyd.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
Okay, so we're going to talk today about the two first albums by the Pink Floyd. We're going to start with a discussion about Piper at the Gates of Dawn, which was released in August 1967. And then we'll go on to talk about their second album, which is A Saucerful of Secrets, released in June 1968. And the difference between the two records really relates to, as much as anything else, a change in lineup. On the first album, we've got Syd Barrett on vocals and guitar, Nick Mason on drums, Roger Waters on bass, and Richard Wright on keyboards. And this is the first recorded output, I think. Maybe actually there were a couple of singles before this, but this basically is the band that was put together as the Pink Floyd sound in 1965, and in 1967 was operating as the Pink Floyd. I know you're very keen on the use of the with bands who shouldn't have the, but there you go.
Well, I have to say, I thought this was another case of Pixies and Talking Heads and Buzzcocks, where people often use a the, where the band name doesn't include a the. So you're saying that in this case, the band name should include a the?
Well, it's an odd one, because the first album, which I've got on vinyl, very clearly says Pink Floyd with no the on the front of it.
Right.
But on the actual record itself, on the label, it says the Pink Floyd. I'm pretty sure that they were the Pink Floyd here. In fact, I would go so far to say, as I can back that up with some archival evidence from John Peel in his posh speaking days. And here he is introducing the band, actually in 1970, for their third Peel session. Have a listen to this.
Hello and welcome to a rather special Sunday repeated on Wednesday programme, and this is one that I, and I hope you, have been looking forward to for several weeks, ever since we knew it was going to happen. We have the Pink Floyd.
Well, there you go. If John Peel says it, I guess it's right. I don't know if there's any recorded instances of John Peel referring to Buzzcocks as the Buzzcocks. Let's hope not. Do I have to re-record the intro at the start when I said this is tape 18? I said it was A Piper at the Gates of Dawn, A Saucerful of Secrets by Pink Floyd. I missed out on the.
Well, I mean, I'd like to think that you should, but actually probably not, because by the time we get round to Saucerful of Secrets, they are Pink Floyd. And on that record, it does say Pink Floyd, not the Pink Floyd. Oh, and but on Atom Heart Mother, which comes next, they're back to the Pink Floyd, and then they're Pink Floyd again. It's a fascinating thing to talk about, and I think I'm glad that we've spent the first, 35 minutes talking about this particular feature of the record. This is the Pink Floyd, then, with Piper at the Gates of Dawn. Did you know this record before we were listening for
no,
this?
No, I did not know either of these albums before. I think I'm on record on our blog as having said I don't like Pink Floyd. There's a reason for this, or I can tell you the root of it. The root of it is, well, that I was brought up as a punk, and you're not supposed to like Pink Floyd, are you?
When you say brought up as a punk, you blaming your parents for this?
No, I was brought up in the woods by feral punks.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Yeah. My musical education, as I said on our pilot episode, I did think for a while that there was no great music before punk. and a general mistrust for anything hippie. Never trust a hippie, you see. But and also when I was at school, the boys at school and the kids at school generally, the girls too, were separated into more. I saw it as being separated into more or less as two tribes, if you will. And the on my side was the people who liked The Cure and The Smiths and U2 and that kind of music, you know, current guitar music. And if you liked older music, it was the punks, you know, The Clash and the Pistols and the Buzzcocks and all that. And then on the other side of that, you had the kids who liked metal when I was at school, which was bands like Kiss and Bon Jovi. Mm-hmm. And they, the older stuff that they liked was Led Zepp, Jethro Tull, and a lot more of the hippy-dippy stuff, and especially Pink Floyd's Spooky Tooth, who I've still never heard to this day. I don't know if they're on Pollard's list, but that kind of thing. Gentle Giant, and it was sort of proggy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I just thought, no, I'm not interested in any of that. Later on, when I was at Sixth Form College, some of those guys who were in the sort of rival tribe, they invited me to join a band that they had, which I did do, and I educated myself a little bit on some of that music, but not Pink Floyd. I drew the line at Pink Floyd. I have tried a few times to listen to them. I've heard Dark Side of the Moon. I think it's rubbish and I think it's boring, and I don't see what all the fuss is about. And I once borrowed an album called Relics from Chiswick Library. I used to borrow a lot of CDs from Chiswick Library back in the 90s.
When you say borrow, you mean steal, right?
No, it's a library. You're supposed to borrow things. I borrowed it from the library.
But you do.
And I'd borrow them and tape them and then take them back a week later. I remember...
So much for your punk attitude.
Yeah. And I borrowed this album called Relics because it had the song See Emily Play, which I liked from the Bowie Pin-Ups album. And I remember I listened to it once and I didn't even bother taping it. So I obviously wasn't that impressed by it. But having said that, as I've said many times on this podcast, I really, really tried to listen without prejudice. And sometimes when we go into these things and I have a preconception that I'm not going to like it, I really, really want to like it. And in this case, I did really, really want to like it, and I did really like it. I tried to do that with the Bee Gees, and I couldn't really get past it. But with this, I did. I really liked it, and every time I've listened to both these albums, I've gone back in to listen again because I like to listen quite a few times so I can talk with at least a little bit of authority on these things. And every time I've listened to it, I've kind of looked forward to listen to it, and very, very rarely has that finger strayed towards the skip button. Very, very rarely. So, you know, overall,
a big
fan of these two albums. I've also then gone and listened to a bit of later Pink Floyd, 70s Pink Floyd, and I still think that's garbage.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound anything like this.
No, it doesn't. Well, the first album particularly with you know, Sid Barrett having so much influence over it. It's psychedelic rock, isn't it? It's not really prog yet, I don't think.
Yeah, it's space rock, I've put for
space
some of them.
Rock, yeah.
Yeah. Psychedelic space rock. In fact, I've written down for the first album.
But I think the fact that you're permanently, out of it on LSD probably helps listening to these. So I think this is notably the first one with Sid on it. He's having trouble right from the beginning. This is what the everyone says about this recording, is that even right from the start, he's taking a lot of LSD, and basically his troubles with maintaining any connection with reality is sort of escalating throughout the recording itself. So it's going to be interesting, because actually on the next tape, we start to listen to his solo stuff, so we'll see what you make of that. But let's get into this record then, because I think it's got some big songs on it. It's certainly got my favourite Pink Floyd song on it, which is Lucifer Sam, which is the second song here, which is kind of, for me, it sounds like a sort of a sinister Duane Eddy. I love the riff on that.
Yes.
And what I particularly like about it, because, you know, Lucifer Sam, the devil incarnate, all this sort of thing. Actually, Sam is Sid Barrett's cat, as referred to in the first line. And it's just a song about his cat. And I think the fact that it's about his cat and not about anything else it makes it even better.
Yeah, and well, again, because I assumed, or even though it does say Siamese cat at some point, doesn't it? because he said hip cat and stuff like that, and obviously cat in the jazz days was a you know, a thing you'd say, he's a real cool cat, and you don't mean he's a cat. But I like that one as well. I like the chorus is very catchy. It's kind of general. The riff is good, and then the bit where it says that cat's something I can't explain, or I think is the line. The kind of chorus bit that comes is very catchy.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say that's my favourite, but you know, I have to be honest that I don't think there's a single song on either of these two albums that I didn't really like. That's not to say that I absolutely loved all of it, but that one is really good. But my favourites, I like loads of them, but the words of that one are quite interesting. But the words of some of the others are, particularly on the first album, are even more interesting, I think. You know,
are you thinking about Grimble Grumble?
Grimble Grumble and the gnome one, and Matilda Mother, about the fairy tale sort of one. We're singing about Mama, Tell Me More and that kind of stuff. The bike one is very good. The mystical lyrics in chapter 24 are very good.
Interestingly, you've mentioned two songs where the lyrics are actually from literature. So just to give you a little bit of background on it. So Matilda Mother is basically a kind of a rewrite of Hilaire Belloc's Canterbury Tales. Is it Canterbury Tales? I think it's Canterbury Tales.
It isn't the Canterbury Tales by Chaucer?
Yeah, no, not that one, obviously. It's Hilaire Belloc.
He did a sequel, did he?
Well, I think he called it the same thing. Maybe it was not called that.
Fair enough. It's not a sequel. It's not Canterbury Tales 2. The Revenge of the Canterbury Tales.
No.
The Whiff of Bath's Revenge.
Yeah, no. And chapter 24 is actually about chapter 24 of I Ching.
All right. You mean the Chinese philosophy thing?
That's the one, yeah.
Because that's... John Cage was into that, wasn't he? And George Harrison, I think, used that for... Didn't he get the phrase, while my guitar gently weeps? I think he got that phrase from the
IG. Yeah, that kind of rings a bell. Yeah, rings a bell.
The lyrics are very mystical, but it is quite vague and don't really know what that one's about. But now you say it, all that stuff about the time is with the month and change returns success and the seven is the number of the young light... And all there that stuff, which is repeated a few times. I guess probably if you know your I Ching, then it probably makes a lot more sense. I did not know any of that. I don't know anything about these songs really.
You don't know very much. So I'm gonna give you a Pink Floyd quiz. Well, it's not really for you because you won't know, obviously. But it's a Pink Floyd quiz for those people listening who might know anything about Pink Floyd.
Can I guess anyway? Even though I might not know.
Well, you won't be able to. But yes, okay. I'll give you a chance to guess. There's you know the song Flaming?
Yes.
I don't know if you particularly like that.
I like that one. That's one of my favourites, yeah.
Right, okay. It includes the word eiderdown.
Yes.
And there are two other Pink Floyd songs that include the word eiderdown.
Okay. Are any of them on these two albums?
No. But one of them is on Relics, I think.
Okay, which I listened to once 25 years ago.
and failed to record.
I didn't memorise the lyrics, I'm afraid. That was very remiss of me.
I'm spoiled because I was going to say, how many other songs do you think Pink Floyd have with the word eiderdown in? Now you can answer that.
Two.
Good. Yep. Well done. And the two songs are, and pause now, listener, if you want to have a go at this, but the two songs are Julia Dream and A Pillow of Winds. I think that's right. I think that's right. Although I'm not really very au fait with later Pink Floyd.
Well, you think there might be more?
Well, there could be, but I'm going with two. I think I'm fairly confident.
Wouldn't on the later songs? Wouldn't they have just called it a quilt or a duvet?
Yeah, they've got all middle class, wouldn't they? At that point? That's very true. The two big songs on here, perhaps the most well known ones are Astronomy Domine and Interstellar Overdrive, particularly the latter. What did you think of these? Because Interstellar Overdrive, I think, is a good example of Pink Floyd's weird shit at the beginning of their career.
Yeah.
Did you like that one?
I did like it. I like the big riff at the start that comes with ding, 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 ding. I like that bit. It's very good, but I would say at nearly 10 minutes long, it's a bit too long. I liked the all the sound effects, and it this you know really at the end there, it's really showing off the stereo to full effect, isn't it? It's panning all the way to one side and then the other. I can imagine that if you were in, was it 1967 this came out? If you were in 1967 listening to that on a stereo when stereo had just come out, particularly if you'd had a drop of the, you know, a bit of a blot of paper, that would have been great. That would have sounded fantastic. It sounds pretty good in 2021 when I listened to it on my big headphones, completely sober.
With just blotting paper.
With just blotting paper. That was licking blotting paper, but it didn't have any chemicals on it. I like that one.
But it's one of those songs. I put it in the same category as Joy Division's version of Sister Ray, in that it's a song that you can't come in halfway through.
Do you know what? One band I did not expect to be mentioned in this was Joy Division. And I know we're jumping ahead to the second album, but the instrumental track on there, what's that called? Set the Control. It's not instrumental, sorry. Yeah. Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun. That reminds me of Joy Division. The drumming is mainly on the tom-toms, and that sort of repeating riff played quite high up on the bass guitar. I know that Joy Division don't have electric pianos and stuff like that on their records, but I didn't expect it to be be reminded of Joy Division when I was listening to Pink Floyd, and I'm not sure Joy Division would readily admit being influenced by Pink Floyd, and possibly they never were. But going back to Astronomy Domine, that is definitely one of my favourites. I absolutely love that one. I've heard that before because I've seen, when I went to see Robin Hitchcock, I remember he played that song in the encore, just solo, just him on piano, and it really doesn't sound like it would work as a solo piano song, but it was great. It was really, really great. And I remember the title because it's quite weird, isn't it? I never heard the Syd Barrett version or the Pink Floyd version, but it's really, really good. The other one I realised, I do know Interstellar Overdrive, ding 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 ding, ding. And I thought when I heard that, this has been in a film or something like that. And I had to Google it to find out what film I'd heard it in. But it's in Doctor Strange, you know, the Marvel film. You might not know the Marvel film with Benedict Cumberbatch. My Marvel nerd sensor picked up on that. And there's also a Doctor Strange connection with the other album. Did you know that? He's on the cover.
No.
On the cover of Saucer Full of Secrets is a picture of Doctor Strange from the original Marvel comics.
Is that right?
Yeah, on the sort of left-hand side of the cover. So I think I read up about it afterwards, and the director of the Doctor Strange movie sort of knew about that sort of tip of the hat to Doctor Strange by Pink Floyd back in the 60s, which is why he put a Pink Floyd song on the soundtrack of the Doctor Strange film.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I didn't know that. What I thought was quite interesting, though, about Interstellar Overdrive is that I've read somewhere now, I wish I could remember where, almost certainly it's going to be Roger Waters, because he talks quite a lot about Pink Floyd. Somebody in the band said that actually the riff itself was related to the theme tune from Steptoe and Son.
Oh, yes. Because I guess it's got it's got the same rhythm, isn't it? Ding 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 ding.
It was an improvisation that started with them playing Steptoe, the theme tune to Steptoe.
Right. Well, I can hear. Yeah, I mean, it's quite a long way from that harmonically. So, did they give Ron Granger a writing credit? I suspect not. Poor old Ron Granger. Astronomy Domine, I would say that's definitely up there with one of my favourite songs on the album, along with Matilda Mother and Flaming. Flaming is an interesting song because it's going back to what we talked about a little bit when we were talking about the Beach Boys and how, you know, taking the harmonies and taking the chords in very unexpected places, because it's all A major. It's in the key of A major, and it's got absolutely the chords you would expect to hear in a song that's in A major. D, an E, bit of B minor. But you know that bit where it goes, yippee, you can't see me, but I can you. That bit.
Very, very Robin Hitchcock, isn't it?
That bit. That can bit is is F major, which is totally, it's a flattened sixth in the scale of A major, absolutely not in the scale at all, and really, I find, really leaps out at you. I like it, but I could also, because is it Sid singing that one? Do you know?
I think it probably is.
His singing is.
Oh no, he's on backing vocals. Okay. That's not Flaming. Flaming, no, he is. Yes, yeah. I think that is Sid.
Right, because his singing isn't the most in tune at that bit as well. Which, you know, he kind of almost wavers around the note rather than hitting it straight on. But it's I really like it. It kind of adds such a lot to it. Just that little touch of just throwing in that little chromatic bit. I also like Sid's. If it is Sid, I don't know who's singing on which songs, but on that song, there's a good example of him watching Buttercups cup the light, and his very English way of pronouncing the words. I really like that. And he's not singing so much on the second album, did you say? Because I missed...
Nobody's hardly on it at all, yeah.
Right, I missed that, his voice a bit, because I like... There's real character in his singing voice.
Yeah, well, he's a lunatic, isn't he?
Yes, yeah. The other one I really, really like is, I like Bike and I like Scarecrow. The last two songs are also fantastic.
And I love the cello on the Scarecrow. I think that's really good.
Yes.
I think it's a cello.
Yeah, coming into the end. And it's because it's mostly not that much instruments on it, isn't it? It's mostly just the clip-clop sounds, a bit of percussion, some organ and vocals, a bit of guitar. And then at the end... this is why it's one of my favourite songs on the album, because at the end, when the contrast, when the cellos come in, the bass guitar, a bit of acoustic guitar comes in. Yeah, I also realised I've heard Bike, because the band I mentioned before that I was in sixth form college with the other lads who were into the prog stuff, the lead singer was a guy called Simon, and when he was doing warm-ups, he used to sing, "I know a mouse and he hasn't got a house, I don't know why I call him Gerald." I did not know until very recently, in the last couple of weeks, where that came from. It always used to make me smile. I thought he'd made it up. But it always used to make me chuckle when he used to do this sort of vocal warm-up thing. So it was quite nice.
I really like Bike. And actually, I've tried to use Bike when I used to be a teacher.
Yeah.
I used Bike with my students to, because it's a list of very odd things.
Yes.
So they had to try and pick them out. Because we've got a borrowed bike, we've got a cloak, we've got a homeless aging mouse, yes, as you say, called, and a gingerbread man. I mean, it's a real disparate set of stuff. And they really like the song until the end. They really don't like, the students I found really didn't like the end of that song. And because it kind of goes into, is it music concrete with that be? I don't know what it is. But I found out, I didn't know until just recently, that the sort of the what I thought was Ducks at the end, it's not Ducks. It's the band laughing, being played backwards.
All right. Yeah, I just put it's a squeaky toy. It sounds like a squeaky toy. The weird sound effects at the end. I mean, they're not for everybody. I quite liked them. I thought it was quite a good way to end the album with just sort of weird sound effects. Because that's the other thing about this, the whole of these two albums, that I didn't really know what to expect from 60s Pink Floyd, but I thought, well, they're probably like a lot of other bands that went a bit weird, but they probably started off as just a basic beat group. They're probably going to sound a little bit like what The Who and The Beatles sounded like in 1967, and they don't.
I think you knowing what I know about you and your musical taste, you would have been right there in the UFO club. You'd have been part of this thing, because I think these are the weirdos, and I think you're all for the weirdos.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's what I like, and I have high hopes for the Syd Barrett albums that we're listening to next, because I think I think it might get even weirder. Not necessarily musically weirder, but
I'm saying nothing.
Weirder.
But
don't spoil
it. It's interesting
anything.
That you say that. You like the album ending with those noises, because the American version of this album is noticeably different in that, well, first of all, it opens with See Emily Play, which is the single that preceded the album, which I don't know if you like that one. I do like
that's the Bowie one. I know the Bowie version. I like the Pink Floyd version too,
But the American version starts with that, but it ends with Interstellar Overdrive.
Yeah.
And it loses Flaming. It loses... Does it lose Flaming? Yes, Illusis Flaming and Assurda Dominae and Bike. None of those are on it.
That's a terrible decision. That's yeah. Those are three of my favourite songs.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, well, I mean, we haven't talked about every song on that, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add, or shall we start to think about what sort of scores you're giving it?
Or shall we do the both scores at the end? Up to you, I don't mind.
Oh, okay, all right. So we'll start to talk about the Swords of the Secrets then, which is the second album. It came out June 1968. And at this point, Syd Barrett is in a bad way. And he's basically impossible to work with. He's not turning up to recordings. He's not turning up to gigs and so on. And on this album, they start off by bringing in David Gilmour to, as they say, complement Syd Barrett's input. But ultimately, he, of course, replaces him. And the way that he found out, actually, that he was being replaced, it's quite a well-known story, but I'll tell you just in case you don't know, is they're going to a gig. So they were a five-piece with Gilmour and Syd Barrett, both in the band. And they're going to a gig in Southampton. And on the way, they're just sort of supposed to go and pick Syd up. And they kind of said, do you know what? Let's not bother. And they just didn't pick him up. And then they went to the gig and performed without him. And that was kind of that. And on this recording, he does appear, of course, at various points, notably on the last song, which is I think his only solo write on this album. But you hear his voice a lot less. And actually, the dominant voice here is Richard Wright, who's lead vocals on four, I think, of the seven songs on it.
And is he the keyboard player?
The keyboard player, that's right.
Okay.
So Roger Waters writes a few of these songs. I think there's one which is all the band, one Barrett song, but really he's kind of, you know, not really part of the band.
So the last two, the last song is the Syd Barrett one, is it?
That is the Syd Barrett one, yeah.
Yeah, you can tell, I recognise that from his voice. Is Corporal Clegg not Syd Barrett singing then? Because it's got that quite English pronunciation on that one. I thought that might be
Roger Waters.
Oh, okay. As I tend to do when we do these podcasts, I've got, you know, box fulls upstairs of old monthly magazines, not those sort, music magazines, and
on the internet now.
I found an uncut magazine from May 2007. So I'll just read you a bit of this. An interview with Roger Waters in which he says exactly what you just said about how they just didn't pick him up for a gig once, but it's quite interesting. The journalist asks him, were drugs the main cause of Syd's decline? Because Syd was like Syd and Roger were the original sort of pals, weren't they? They knew each other from school and stuff. So anyway, here's Roger's reply. Oh yes, I'm sure acid exacerbated symptoms that I think were going to manifest anyway. But I'm not a neurologist, so I'm really not the right person to ask. But even at the top of the pop sessions we did for See Emily Play in June 67, he was already getting a bit odd. He was saying things like, John Lennon doesn't have to do this, why should I? He was starting to disconnect. It was pretty fast downhill from then on, and by the end of 68, he wasn't operating at all. And then he says about how that one day they just didn't pick him up for the gig. But also that he turned up a few times. He would still turn up sometimes during the later career. It's rather sad. I mean, I'm not blaming the members of Pink Floyd, because he does sound like he was pretty unworkable with by that point. But it just reminds me a little bit of the Brian Jones thing that we talked about. You know, he founded the band, and he's not in the band anymore, or gradually being edged out.
They definitely felt bad about it, and you can see that in terms of how he's referred to in, you know, later albums. Albums you won't ever listen to, probably, because they're in the mid-70s, but Shine On You Crazy Diamonds.
I haven't been living under a rock for the last 50 years. I do know about Shine On You Crazy Diamonds, yeah. Yeah, I don't particularly like it, but I do know what it's about, yeah. Yeah.
So I do think that they did feel bad, but I sent you a video, actually. I don't know if you watched it. It's a YouTube clip of them performing the Barrett song, Jug Band Blues.
Yeah, I did watch
it, yeah. He's odd, isn't he? I mean, he performs in a way that is very intense, you'd have to say.
Yeah.
The thing with him was that he would go on stage and then not do anything.
Yeah.
Well, you mean, if you're a band, that's not really any good to you, is it? All right, well, let's talk about Jug Band Blues then, because that is the last Barrett contribution to the Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
I really like that one. I think it's an amazing song. It's basically a song about schizophrenia, I think. It's a really open, view of oneself deteriorating mentally. That's how I see it anyway. In that, you know, there's sort of a lot of humour in it, but it's all quite edgy. The song itself has kazoos on it, which is a good thing. In fact, there's another song with a kazoo on it, which I'll talk to you about in a bit. But anyway, how do you feel about this one? I will think it's one of the best ones on the album.
Yeah, I like it. It's got a lot going on in a fairly short song, because it starts off with, you know, it's awfully considerate of you to think of me here. And then it's got that bit about I'm not here. And then, which is kind of like nursery rhyme lyrics, a bit like some of the stuff on the first album. But then it's got that I don't care if the sun don't shine bit, which seems to me to be a reference to that Elvis Presley song, I don't care if the sun don't shine, and give me a little in the wintertime when I'm with my baby, whatever that one's called. Mm. And then the really weird instrumental section with the trumpets and everything, which is really, really weird.
Kazoos.
Yeah, and kazoos. And then that slow bit at the end, and the sea isn't green, and I love the Queen, and what exactly is a dream, and what exactly is a joke. So he's, again, it's kind of like a childish rhyme scheme with green, dream, and Queen. And then the fourth line, the very last line, and if you say, you know, his sign off to the band is doesn't rhyme, and is the word joke. So he's kind of finishing on a joke, almost. So what you say about the humour, you know?
Well, I think it's quite a profound ending, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I like the la 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 bits in it as well.
Yeah,
which you didn't mention, but I think it's a strong song. But that's him. That's him done really, because I think he's on the really long. He gets a co-write, sorry, for the really long instrumental, A Source Full of Secrets, which sort of breaks down into four parts. But otherwise, it's no longer his stuff that we're listening to. All right, well, let's go back to the other song. I wanted to talk about the other song with a kazoo on it, which was Corporal Clegg. I didn't. This is Ace. This. So okay. So Corporal Clegg, the song is itself. It's clearly about First World War soldier who loses a leg. Called Clegg, and you think, well, okay, Leg and Clegg, that's the rhyme there, right?
Yeah.
What I didn't realise until I was doing a little bit of research for this is that it does feature a kazoo, and do you know who invented the kazoo?
I do not. Is it Mr. Kazoo?
It's not Mr. Kazoo. No. It's Thaddeus von Clegg.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, invented the kazoo in 1840, so 20-7.
Yes, yeah.
The important thing about that song is, of course, is that Roger Waters would go on and write loads of songs about, you know, men in World War One, war songs generally, I think. And he's obviously been very affected by the fact that his father died in 1944 in the war. But this is the first one, on first Pink Floyd song about that topic.
Yeah, and again, it's got some of that sort of childish rhymes about, you know, he had a medal too in Orange, Red and Blue, he found it in the zoo. I thought this was the most Beatlesy of any of the things on here. It could almost have fitted on that second side of Abbey Road with Mean Mr. Mustard and Polyphene Pam and stuff. But it's also quite Syd Barrett-y. I was quite surprised that it wasn't Syd Barrett because of that way he's pronouncing stuff. It also reminded me of The Who's A Quick One While He's Away in places.
Yes.
And the only bit I didn't really like was the bit with the kazoos, actually. But the lyrics are very good, and it's kind of like, you know, referencing, yes, he's lost a leg, he's got the medal, he's got the umbrella in the rain, he's never been the same, so he's probably suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And then Mrs. Clegg is having another drop of gin, so she's developed a drinks problem. You know, this is all very common stuff. If you read, biographies of any, I read a lot of musician biographies, and lots of them had parents who were, you know, in the Second World War, and you know, drinking and being violent and short tempered and basically suffering from PTSD before it was named. I did like that one. There's others I liked more, I gotta say. I really like Remember a Day. In fact, I think, is Richard Wright, did you say he's Richard Wright, is that his name, the keyboard guy?
That's right.
Yeah, so I think he's rapidly becoming my favourite person in this band, because his contributions to loads of these songs, the piano playing in Remember a Day is really good, and there's a really sort of quiet piano break in it that I really like too. And just generally, there's all sorts of bits of Hammond organ and a Rhodes, electric Rhodes piano and a bit of vibraphone here and there on various different songs. Xylophones, I'm presuming that's all him, I don't really know.
I guess so, yeah.
But yeah, I really like Seesaw, and I really like Remember a Day.
They're both Richard Wright. The Remember a Day actually does feature Syd Barrett on his guitar solo. It's a slide guitar.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That's Syd Barrett, apparently.
And I like the bit in that song where it goes, "Why can't we play today? Why can't we stay that way?" It gets really, really psychedelic on that bit. Yeah. But again,
a bit long for me, that one. It's okay, but it goes on a bit, I think.
Yeah.
Seesaw, you really like, do you?
Yeah, I really like that one, yeah. Really like that. It's quite sad, and it seems to be about somebody's sister that they've maybe lost contact with or something. I don't know. I wondered if
that's interesting you say that, because I thought it was a bit dodgy lyrically, in terms of brothers and sisters and going up and going down.
Oh, right. I didn't read that at all. I thought it was just their mood is going up and going down, or their relationship is going up and going down. I wondered if it might be partly about Syd. I know it says sister, but it seems to be about somebody who they used to be close to and now they're having difficulty connecting, or that it goes up and down.
What I do know is that when they first recorded that, so I don't know if it was just Richard Wright doing his demo, but it was written down, it didn't have a title at that point, and it was written down as the most boring song I've ever heard, bar two.
I don't agree. I could name you far more boring songs than that one. In fact, talking of which,
yes.
The instrument, the 11-minute instrumental set. So that's very unfair. I like the 11-minute instrumental track, but I did think that the bit in the middle, which is mainly a drum solo, that didn't need to go on quite as long.
I totally agree, and it works better when you know what it's about. Do you know what it's about?
I know it's called A Saucer Full of Secrets, but that doesn't really mean anything to me. What's it about?
Okay, well, it's like a storm
at the bit in the middle. It sounds like a storm.
It's not a storm, actually. I mean, it's called Storm Signal. There are four parts to it. So it starts with something else, then goes on syncopated pandemonium, which is pretty apt. Then it's got Storm Signal and then Celestial Voices at the end. It's basically about war again. It's about a battle. So the first part is the sort of the setup to the battle itself. So that's kind of your ominous synths going on there.
The organ and the big timpani.
That's right. And I think even a squeaky toy on there. I'm not quite sure the point of that. But anyway, there is something like that. Then the second part, the syncopated pandemonium, is the battle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the craziness of that. Excuse me. Then the storm signal is where we've kind of got the jangly bells bit. This is a view now of the dead after the battle.
Is this the last part you're talking about there?
No.
The slow organy bit.
So this is the jangly bells is the sort of the view of the dead. And then the last part is the mourning for the dead, which is the celestial voice. This is the sort of the peacefully bit.
I love the last part. I really like all of it. I just wish the drum solo bit didn't go. So that would be the big battle, I guess. The big battle.
That's the battle itself. Yeah.
So I think that bit I could lose a minute of that. That could be a bit shorter.
I guess that's a view of war, isn't it? Really.
Well, yeah.
Could be a bit shorter. This battle that I'm in here as a soldier could be a bit shorter for me.
I mean, the thing about war, what is it good for?
Well, not 3 minutes.
Good God, y'all. To say it again.
I'm not going to say it again. Okay. But the other sort of the other big track on this is Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun, which is quite similar lyrically to Chapter 24, in that it's sort of taking in these Eastern philosophical lyrics. This time the lyrics are taken from some I think it's Tang Dynasty poetry,
right?
And I mean, obviously, it's all about the riff. I love the riff on this, but also I like the drumming. The drumming is quite interesting, and I didn't know what it was, but I've subsequently found that it's timpanis, but they're being played in a strange way somehow. I'm not quite sure how that works. I really like that song, and actually, I've never seen Pink Floyd play, but I have seen that song performed live a number of times by the Welsh space rock band Sendelica.
Oh yeah,
and their version is also excellent. I have to recommend that. So you can probably find that somewhere on the internet if you haven't heard it. But yeah, do you like that one?
I did like that. Was the one that I thought sounded a bit like Joy Division. I did like it. It threatened to get a bit boring. Because it is quite repetitive, and the lyrics are quite low in the mix, so you can't really hear the words. But also, I find that whoever's singing on that one, his voice isn't. I don't find it as compelling as Sid's voice. It's got a bit more character. This whoever's singing that is that Roger Waters, is it? His voice.
I'd guess it is song.
Is a bit more featureless, or a bit less featureful. But when the sort of vibraphones and the electric keyboards came in and stuff, then it got my interest again. But yeah, I mean, like I say, there are no songs on either of these albums that I disliked.
I'm sure you were quite shocked by that, weren't you?
I was. I hoped I would like it, but I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. Yeah, and I also enjoyed the reference to Herobrine the Wake in the first song. I like the first song a lot. Let There Be More Light. Which seems to be again a bit like the first song on the first album. It's a space thing, or it seems to be a space thing, because it's talking about a ship coming down and making contact with the human race at RAF Mildenhall. Something in the sky, or Lucy in the sky, in fact. So there's something stuff about cosmic art and glowing from his toes. A really good guitar solo at the end. I don't really know what the living soul of Herobrine the Wake's got to do with it. But I liked that he was there. Yeah, he was a guy who fought against the Normans, wasn't he? Herobrine the Wake.
I don't know.
Yeah, he was from that part of the world where they're from, East Anglia or Cambridgeshire or wherever. Yeah.
Well, RAF Mildenhall is Cambridge, isn't it? So I presume it's the nearest one.
Yeah,
to
it's definitely over that way. Yeah, yeah. I think I've driven past it on the way to Norwich City.
You go past everything on the way to Norwich.
You do, you do.
Good. So I'm really pleased that you like these, because it was, as you've said, quite clear that you're not a Pink Floyd fan before you started listening.
Yeah.
But I would say that I've always felt that this is my favourite bit of Pink Floyd. I do like some of the other ones. I like Animals, which you probably don't like.
I've got Animals on vinyl. My mate Colin brought it round to my house in around about 1989, and he left it there.
You've never listened.
It's the one with the Battersea Power Station, right?
That's right. Yeah,
I didn't listen to it then, and I've never listened to it since. He lives in Costa Rica now, so it's a bit difficult for me to return it to him.
This era of Pink Floyd, I think, is obviously the one that you're going to get most of. I think you can go into Atom Heart Mother and enjoy that. I like that one as well. But then that might be it. I think if you gave Relics another listen, you'd probably like it more than you did first time.
I think you might be right. Yeah, I think you might be right, because that's like a compilation of singles from the same era as this, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, yeah, I will go back and I'll give it another chance, and I might even have a play of that Animals album.
You might not mind that.
Okay.
Go for Atom Heart Mother. Listen to Atom Heart Mother. I think you'll like that. Anyway, are we going to give these records a score?
Yes. Yes, let's do that. Right. Well, there wasn't much in it in terms of, like, how much I liked them. I liked them both fairly the same amount, but I think I like the Piper at the Gates of Dawn a little bit more. Probably half a point more, I think. So I'm going to give that 7.5, and I'm going to give A Sourceful of Secrets 7.
Okay, wow. No, you did like them.
I really did.
You've gone higher than me, but I'm in the same direction in that I like the first one, the pipe best. So I gave that 7, and I gave Sourceful of Secrets 6.5.
I think overall, you know, none of it were I going to skip, apart from possibly Interstellar Overdrive, which goes on too long. But there's always interesting. There's always lots going on. Lyrically, especially lyrically on the first album, not quite as much lyrically on the second album, but musically, the whole thing is interesting. And I really like, a lot of the time, they've got little instrumental breaks with a bit of organ and bass and electric guitar, and really, really enjoyed those parts as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, so we've enjoyed tape 18 there, and then we're going to distill from tape 18, which is the Pink Floyd, the Syd Barrett-ness, which I think we can both say that we do like. Is it going to be too much for us when we consider only Syd Barrett on his two solo albums, Barrett and The Mad Cat Laughs? Well, you'll have to wait and find out, but that's our next show, which will be tape 19, which will follow this one at some point.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcasts, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kicker of Elves and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.